Blog Talk Radio.
Blessings from the Darkness is an eclectic collection of writings by a talented and diverse group of writers and published authors in dedication of and in support of our dearest friend, the award-winning and best-selling author Yvonne Mason and her son. All sales of this anthology, present and future, are donated to her in support of her son, who at the time of this publication has been ill and out of work and struggling to support his family due to an undiagnosed illness. Yvonne has been an inspiration, selflessly supportive, and a dear friend to many aspiring writers and indie authors. She believes in paying it forward, offering her knowledge and insights and friendship to kindred souls. Yvonne has a saying, she threatens to let loose the flying monkeys when there is wrongness in the lives of those near and dear to her. So after bringing us together for a successful and fun-filled double anthology by Yvonne, including notable authors and first-time published writers, and after learning about the continued troubles of her son and his family, we came together as such monkeys to fly free, far, and wide in what we do best, G.L. Lentz. This book can be purchased at Amazon.com, Amazon Kindle, Barnes & Noble, and www.blackbedsheetbooks.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is Off the Chain, and I am your host, Yvonne Mason. And yes, it was another piece of shameless promotion. That particular book, all the proceeds do go to my son, who is ill. And as the reader of the ad says, we have no clue what is wrong with him. He has been denied his Social Security, and we're still fighting for that. So it is an anthology of stories from some of the best friends in the entire world. It was a complete secret. Did not know they were going to do it, and I know everything, but didn't know that. So if y'all would go out and purchase the book, and know that all sales do go to my son who lives in Texas, who has a son who is insulin-dependent diabetic, and they are struggling, it would be most appreciative. Tonight's show, my friend and fellow author has been just, I guess, biting at the bit, waiting for this show, because she is launching her new book, and I have read the book. But before we get into that, my guest tonight is author Sherry Retzler. She is a multi-award-winning, multi-genre author, a writing coach, and a speaker. And currently, she's authored one photography book, I Wish You Joy, three books of poetry, Paper Bones by Light Betrayed, Poetry of the Vampires, The Book of Now, and Midnight Assassin, A Tale of Lust and Revenge, a dark urban fantasy novella. Her most recent release, The Book of Now, is a compelling book of nonfiction poetry, which issues are taken from current events. Now, what she has done is she has just released a new book titled Breaking the Glass Slipper. Before we get into that, I want to finish telling you about Miss Sherry. She is a retired U.S. Air Force non-combat veteran, and she completed her bachelor and graduate degrees while serving her country, and for that we thank her for her service. Her background includes bylines in newspapers and online journals, plus previous works as an assistant poetry editor for an online poetry journal, a freelance columnist, and a photojournalist. Sherry was once a featured author in Southern Writers Magazine and in Focus on Women Magazine, as well as a featured guest speaker on numerous radio shows. Also, Sherry is the Charlotte, North Carolina Regional Municipal Liaison for National Novel Writing Month, which promotes writing and literacy for all ages. Now I'm exhausted. And I know she must be. Hello, my
I am
friend.
Too.
You are one busy lady, I'm going to tell you. And again, thank you for your service, Sherry, and for your sacrifice for serving our country and taking care of us. Because you wanted to. I appreciate it.
Thank you. You're very kind.
I'm only honest. You know that about me, after all.
I know that about you. That's why I love you so much. You're so blunt, it's scary.
Yeah, sometimes I scare myself. but
so before we get started, how was your new year?
Well, it's quiet, thank goodness. You're my last show until after the new year. That's right, ladies and gentlemen. Tonight is the last show until next Wednesday. So if you don't tune in tonight, then you just got to either listen to it in archives or just wait till next Wednesday. When we start all over, and we have 3 months' worth of guests lined up already.
Well, that's going to be awesome.
Yes, so I'm very excited. Of course, I'm going to bring you back, as always. I love bringing my past guests back because that keeps y'all out there. In fact, last night on the show, Wanda Luthman and I did a show on grief. And because of the show, two independent bookstores reached out to her and wanted her children's books on their shelves.
Oh, that's amazing. That's great news.
Amazing things happen with this show. It just makes me so excited. So
well,
how
you were able to reach out and touch so many different people and in so many different genres and fields, and you don't just talk to authors, you talk to all kinds of people, and that's what's exciting.
It is, because what happens is it opens doorways for all these other folks to be heard where they would not normally have a platform, and we're heard all over the world. I was looking at that. We're even heard in Bangladesh, of all places.
Oh my goodness.
What I said, we're heard in Nigeria and the Netherlands and Germany and Canada. We're real big in Canada, of course, the U.S. Where else? France, England. I mean, we're heard all over the world because I have this show not just set up here on Blog Talk Radio, but it's set up on podcasts. So you get a different dynamic of people. So y'all are getting out there.
So let's see if we can embarrass ourselves now. Let's see. We can do hola, guten Abend, hey mates. Let's see, what else?
Au revoir.
No, that's goodbye. Konnichiwa.
Bonsoir.
Let's see, what else? I don't know how to say it how about yo?
Yo?
Hopefully
so between the two of us, we got a few languages there of hello.
There we go.
That works.
And don't forget, hey, y'all.
That's the main one. Hey, y'all. How's your mama name? Glad to have you at the house.
There you go. Y'all come back now.
Sit a spell. Come in and sit a spell. God, I love my southern roots.
Oh, I'm a Yankee girl.
No, honey, you done got southernized. When you can say, hey, y'all, like you just said, hey, y'all, you done southernized. I'm sorry.
I've been in the South for a while.
See, you picked it up. In another life, you were definitely born southern. That is fortunate.
I think I was Scarlett O'Hara.
I'll think about it tomorrow.
That's right. Let me cause some trouble today, and we'll think about the rest of it tomorrow.
There you go. Love it, love it, love it. Well, my sweet friend, I guess we've teased our folks long enough, don't you reckon?
Yes, sir. Yes, ma'am.
So let's talk about, ladies and gentlemen, her book is called Breaking the Glass Slipper. Now, I read this book.
We should tell them right up front that it's a fictional memoir, which means that it's not a fictional story. A fictional memoir means that the story is true, but that I have changed the names of places and people and sometimes have reordered events or have created some dialogue to represent events. But the story itself is true.
In order to protect the guilty, right?
All of us. Mm-hmm.
All of the above. But I have to tell you, ladies and gentlemen, if I didn't love Miss Sherry so much, I would send the monkeys after her simply on general principles. This woman kept me up at night reading this blooming book. And then to make it even worse, Sherry, when I finally got so tired I couldn't keep my eyes open and I turned over to go to sleep, I was dreaming about the stupid thing.
Oh. Well, that's the finest compliment that I think anyone's ever given me.
Because I wanted to reach through the book and just smack the main character.
And that's exactly the reaction I hope you'd have. I think that boomers are going to have that reaction, or you're going to be able to relate to some things that yourself that perhaps you've done or things you did or the people you know who did these things. And then young kids are going to go, you did what?
And, yeah, what?
And then there's going to be some who are going to recognize themselves doing some of those crazy, stupid things that I did when I was young. And that was the whole point of doing the book, to maybe emphasize some things that are going on today that need to stop and maybe wake some people up and say, you know, whoa, been there, done that, got the T-shirt, you don't want to go there.
What's so funny is my guest, Lloyd Potts, he's a regular guest on my show, and we talk about habits and addictions. And as I'm reading this book, I'm saying, now, the first time was a decision. Okay, I can live with a decision. The second time made it a pattern. The third time it was an addiction. Break the addiction.
No, I don't think it was an addiction. I think it was self-sabotage. I think I, you know, as I say in the book, the story is about my search for happily ever after, looking for what I grew up believing was the happily ever after ideal. And somewhere along the line, because of the movies and books and things that were in my life when I was born in the 50s, somehow sex and love kind of got twisted and confused as one and the same thing, that if you had sex with someone, obviously you must be in love. And, I mean, because that's what happened in the movies. And if you love someone, then you automatically had sex. And so the two things were like this one big circle. And I just believed that when it finally happened for me, one was going to follow the other, or one was going to create the other. And over and over, I managed to self-sabotage myself until I realized I was self-sabotaging. And then I started deliberately setting myself up.
Why?
And because, like, you know, being with, like, for example, being with a married man was easier than having to deal with a relationship, because I knew the married man and I weren't going to go anywhere. So
The thing is, what the younger generation, two generations back, say my children, not just the children now that are many adults, but even my children. The dynamic of that time period was our parents had just come out of a war. The standard or the moral compass was very rigid. I mean, you didn't even hardly hold hands, much less kiss, because you were on your way to a path of self-destruction. And then we got the 60s. Now, I was born in 51, so
I was born in 54.
Those years of you turned on Ozzy and Harriet, or you turned on My Three Sons, or you turned on
Father Knows Best.
Any of those. It was always happily ever after. Mama stayed home. She took care of the kids. Daddy went to work. Life was grand, which was a joke.
Okay, well, in my house, it wasn't a joke. I grew up in I had a very idyllic childhood. I had parents who loved each other. It was, you know, a mother who believed that you saved yourself for the man you loved. And, of course, I talk about this in the book. I'd say, well, Mom, how do I know when, how will I know when I'm in love? Well, you'll just know. See? Now, when you're telling a girl who's got, oh, my God, raging hormones for the best boyfriend ever, you're just going to know. And she's laying in his arms going, I know. I mean, come on. That's what happened in the 60s. It was the age of free love. And
free sex.
No one worried. Yeah, free sex, and no one worried about it. And yet, I grew up in the household where you didn't give in until you believed this was the man you were going to marry, which I did believe when I finally surrendered my virginity. It was the guy I thought was happily ever after. And it might have been until things got screwed up along the way. And he and I both contributed to that. Thank you very much. But, you know, it's it just was a one massive, and I talk about it in the book, how things evolve, things happen, and the things we learned and didn't do because of our age or did do because of our age, and the lessons are there for people to pick up on. Some of them are fairly universal, too. Well, you know, you just learn them as you go.
And the old adage, youth and stupidity go hand in hand, and the fact that your character continued to make that same decision over and over again, expecting a different result of this is love, this is happily ever after, without
Well, the circumstances
the wisdom.
Were always different. That's the thing. You get into a new circumstance and a new situation. The circumstances might be the same, but the situation is different. The people are different. So the attitudes are different. And the hope never went away. It wasn't until the hope finally went away when the self-sabotaging began. And when I lost all expectation that there was going to be a happily ever after. And so the downward spiral went for a while, and the adventures began, in truth. and it was quite, the road of self-discovery is never easy when you allow it to finally happen. It's facing the truths about oneself, the hardest truths of all. And so that's why I ended up writing the book, because it was time to be honest about some things.
And that was one of my questions, is the history of the book and what made you write it, and did it become a catharsis for you? Was it at that point in time, once you finished the book, were you able to look at yourself through a different lens and say, yes, I consciously made these decisions, but the flip side of that was, in the end, I learned?
I think, as I say in the book, as I was going, as each chapter evolved, and I began to see myself through that lens, I was honest. I tried to be as brutally honest as I could, and I tried to. The book is written rather conversationally, as if we were sitting down having this discussion, and my sarcasm in there and my snarkiness is kind of a reflection of who I am. It really is. I really do talk like that, and I learned, of course, I was learning why I was actually doing some of the things I was doing through those years. I don't know that there were any eye-opening revelations, except the acknowledgments were eye-opening, to say, okay, I really was crazy, I really was stupid, and here now I understand why as these things happened. And that's what that was all about, because I see things going on today that are very similar to the things I did before myself, and so I felt it was time to say, look, you were not the first people to do these crazy things. Here's someone who lived through it. Now please stop. Please learn from me. You know? And I didn't want to write it as the adult saying, you must not do this. I wanted to write it as a person who was doing it, saying, okay, we did this thing, you know. Now look what it cost. Don't let it cost you what it cost me.
And that brings up a very good point, that for every action, there is always an equal and opposite reaction, and then there are consequences.
Oh, my gosh,
and,
yes.
Some of the consequences are life-changing.
Well, in my case, it was divorce, it was loneliness, it was some very bad relationships. There was a moment when I contemplated suicide at one point in my life based on something that happened to me. And each of these things that happened to me changed me, moved me forward, altered my perceptions. In some ways altered the way I lived my life, in other ways deepened some of my self-destructive tendencies. Eventually, I did manage to work my way out of all of those. And I think the whole point is, as I learned the difference between sex and love, as I figured out that there was no real happily ever after, which there really is, but as I thought there really wasn't, that's when I started to discover the real magic of relationships and the truth behind real love. And just when I stopped looking for happily ever after, it gobsmacked me, okay? So,
and that's usually what happens.
Well, that's what happens with love. But most people don't end up getting the happily ever after. And it isn't the flowers and dancing birds and, you know, things like everybody thinks it is. Happily ever after is a magical wonderment that isn't a state of mind or a state of being. The happily ever after is the imperfection of oneself and the acceptance of those imperfections. And that's when you find happily ever after. And I think that was the revelation, too.
When
from chapter 16 on, that's when we meet my current husband and the prince of my life. And as I like to say, meeting him was like having thunder and lightning come together in one great cataclysm.
And the way that that from 16 on reads, the character in the book, the male character in the book, who is your current husband, it dawned on you that he was beginning to, as you say, chase you, and that was a new phenomenon for you.
Oh, boy, was it ever. Had never happened to me before. Not like that. Not in a good way. Not in a way that said, you know, no matter where you go, what you do, I'm going to be there. I want you in my life. That was a new experience. You know,
and
to be in your 30s.
It wasn't, I want to be in your life just to sleep with you to satisfy myself or to satisfy the lust that rages within us. It was a progression. That was what I got out of the story, is that it was a progression of him proving himself that he was going to be there for you. He wanted to take care of you. He wanted to weather the storms with you. He wanted to weather the good times with you and rejoice in the good times with you. But I also got the impression that at first you sort of had him at arm's length going, what manner of evil is this? Yeah, go away. No, not
yes.
Having it.
Yes, I told him literally, to, you know, we became friends first, which I tell people, if you're going to have a real relationship, you have to be best friends with your partner. If you're
Absolutely.
Not, that thing is going to fail miserably.
Mm-hmm. It will.
I get the pink eye sometimes from people when I say that, but it's true. So we managed to become friends first, and for quite a while before anything romantic developed, but when he started to have feelings for me and he told me that he loved me, I was like, shh, don't you say that. Don't ever say that to me again. Because anyone who had ever expressed love for me or me for them ended in a disaster.
Uh-huh.
And so I was having none of it. Just not. No. Mm-mm, go away. Go get out of my life. And
stop
he dogged me.
He
yeah, really, he dogged me. And it was the most wonderful, terrifying experience of my life. It really was. And maybe I should clarify for those who don't know this book yet or haven't seen my, you know, pages or read anything about it. The story starts in 1965 and follows my life until I marry my current husband. And through these years, this 25 years or so that it transpires, the whole point of the story are the ups and downs and the successes and failures, mostly failures, that I had that made me who I am today and the lessons I learned because of it. And finding that happily ever after, wanting the fairy tale life, was the way I was brought up. And so this was my journey to find it. And for a long, long time, I thought it was a hopeless journey. So that's what the whole book is about. And I'm glad to say that I did find it. In fact, he gave me my real glass slipper long before we were ever, you know, in love or intimate or anything, which is was kind of prophetic, you know?
Uh-huh. Very prophetic. And what I find interesting is because you and I are both children of that generation, the first relationship and the first marriage was young. I mean, in my mind, still we're still babies, and a lot of us got married young because that's what we were supposed to do.
Mm-hmm. Well, in my case, I kind of trapped myself into a relationship on a dare. And because of that, there began the downward spiral. I kind of screwed myself, backed myself into a corner, expecting to be rescued. And for those who don't know, there was a time when I was engaged, and then suddenly I was engaged to somebody else. And the second someone was a dare that I thought was going to, you know, happen and then be undone, because my first fiancé was going to ride in and rescue me from myself. Well, when he didn't do that, and I realized that those things really don't happen, then I was stuck in a situation that started the movement of my whole life, probably propelled the book forward. Not to say that I didn't care for my first husband. I did. And we were friends, truly. But that developed over time. We didn't start out with a friendship. We didn't know each other well enough to have a friendship. We had a lot of, you know, lust going on, but there wasn't a whole lot of anything else because we really didn't even know each other. And
yes,
knowing
and
each other...
Point, you had no common interest either.
No, we didn't. It was, yeah, except for sex. Woohoo! And we had a lot of that. But
and that flame burned out. Then there you were.
Well, and then we found ourselves overseas, and we found ourselves, you know, dealing with real issues, and there were lots of other people then who came into our lives. And when real love finally did hit me, unfortunately, I was already married, and so it was there again. I was caught in a situation where you aren't prepared for it coming, and you don't know how to deal with it, and probably... You know, we never deal with it correctly when we're stuck in those kinds of situations. So the whole journey is one misstep after another, or bad timing, or bad luck, or just very bad decisions. And I'm not going to say that everything is bad in the book. There were some glorious moments and some adventures that I wouldn't trade for anything. But the whole story is about how the decisions we make and the choices we make change everything.
Well, and it doesn't just affect us. It affects, it's like a ripple effect. It affects people around us for years.
Mm-hmm.
And then it affects the people then it affects other people that they know, and it becomes like a tsunami of sorts, because then you have all these different people involved. And it shouldn't have been that way, but it was.
Mm-hmm. And then there were moments that were very, there were revelations, like learning to love a man or anyone, woman to woman or man to man, doesn't matter, but learning to love without needing sex. Who knew, right? Could men and women actually be friends and love each other and not have sex? Oh, my God, what a concept. And the first time that happened to me, it was like, really? And I was, what, 19? I mean, when I discovered that it was possible to really genuinely care for a guy and not automatically be plunging into bed. Wow, this is great. So the lessons we learned.
What manner of evil is this?
Yes. Why didn't anybody tell me about this? No, but it was these are the lessons you have to learn along the way. And even though I had been told this was possible, didn't believe it because everybody had sex. And that's just the way it was. And suddenly I was with a very mature man who showed me that you could love someone and not have sex. He just happened to also be a poet, and it was wonderful. you know, poetry is its own sex. What can I say?
Well, yeah, it is. Poetry is its own aphrodisiac.
Mm-hmm. And he let me have some of that, too, and that was wonderful. Poetry, that is, not aphrodisiacs.
Sherry, you are a riot. Well,
but there were other things that happened, too, like getting to sing and having sex on top of the piano. That was not bad.
I read that one. I went, what did she say? Come on, what?
Yes, that was a lot of fun.
Ladies and gentlemen, if you haven't read this book, it's called Breaking the Glass Slipper by Sherry Rentzler. If you have not read it, do not go now. You cannot leave the show because you're going to miss something. But after the show, go and order this book because I am telling you, you will want to find Sherry and smack her because you won't be able to sleep at night while you're reading this book because you're seeing where this character is going. And you're wanting to say, stop, you're going to get hit by a train. But the character's not listening. She's going to get hit by that train, no matter how water.
But it's almost like you can't stop looking at the accident. It's like, okay, now we're in it. And, oh, my God, she didn't really do that, did she really? And then you're stuck, and then you can't wait to see if she gets out of it alive. And then, oh, my God, she did. And, no, she's doing it again.
The same action.
No, but it's different.
The definition of insanity, doing the same thing over and over again, expecting a different result.
Well, it wasn't exactly the same. Now, come on. There are differences.
Lust does not equate love.
Yes, that's true. Sometimes lust, though, is just fine.
Well, with the one character, yeah, I could see that.
Don't forget, wonderful revenge sex now, okay?
Well, that's true. Tell me you have
not had revenge sex.
Oh,
Go ahead, I dare you.
I have. I'm guilty.
Okay. So, you know, that's in there too, folks.
Yes, it is. Revenge sex is in there, too. But the sad part with revenge sex is it didn't leave me feeling any better. It just sort of left me feeling blah.
In my case, I got exactly the result I wanted. It was glorious. It was so glorious. And I think I may have been made for that all along. I should have just started out with that, and it would have solved all my problems, but didn't start out that way. So, but it was the last time that I did it was to a point, and I made my point very clear, and it was for my current husband. I had to make my point clear, and it worked, and it was wonderful, which was before he and I were together, I should say.
But, so let me ask you this. How does your Prince Charming feel about breaking the glass slipper?
He knows everything. Yeah,
he knew it before.
No, my husband does not read my books. I need to say this up front. He hasn't read a single book. He's read snippets and bits and pieces. He has heard me read things out loud because I read all of my books out loud to make sure that they sound right. But he knows my entire past, all of it, even the things that are not in the book. I was going to mention one of those tonight. But he knows everything. And when I told him I was going to do the book, he was like, hey, whatever you got to do, do. So he supports me 100%, and that's why I love him. He believes in me, and he believes that if I'm doing it, I'm doing it for a purpose. And I did. So I got to say, he's truly a prince.
The book itself, all joking aside, the book itself is so filled with poignant life's lessons because once you get away from it, once you get away from the book and you put it in perspective, it is, as you say, people see themselves in that book and people can see, you know, some of the things I did maybe were not so smart. Did I grow from that or did I learn anything? Is there anything that I can pass on as wisdom? And I would venture to guess that anybody with an ounce of common sense and is honest with themselves would say yes to all of those questions.
And I do think that the lessons were hard learned, but they were learned in the end, and that was the whole point. Thank goodness I didn't live my life still banging my head against the wall and finally realize what was going on. Maybe that's all a part also of growing up, getting older, finally realizing that, you know, in order to change your life, you have to change. And I think that was the secret all along.
That the change does have to come from within. You cannot change other people to fit the mold that, and when I say you, I say that in a general term, we can't change other people to fit the mold that we have in our mind and in our heart of the way that we want things to be. Because, like you say, you lived in a, and I did too. My parents were married for 66 years, my mother always said, you'll never find anybody like your daddy. And, of course, that was put into my head so many times that by the time I started looking, she was right. So nobody ever measured up.
That's true. I had the same problem.
But what some of us don't see as children is the downside of that happily ever after, the struggles and the lack of money and the everyday things that go on that sometimes children don't see. All we see is that we have two parents that love each other passionately. You know, my dad went to work every day. He took care of my mother and five children, one of them disabled, at a time when $50 fed seven people, plus paid the bills. And we as children didn't always see the struggle that when it came around to Christmas, Daddy was working from before sunup to after sundown to bring in extra money so Mother could buy Christmas. And that is a happily ever
That's what
ever
escapes
after.
Us when we're growing up. Yeah, that's what
exactly.
We don't see. And I had the same thing. My father my father worked, and my mother, who was also in the Air Force, my dad and mom were both in the Air Force. My mother was in the Air Force. But back then, when you got married and you decided to have a family, you were forced to get out if you got pregnant. And so she separated after 3 years knowing she was going to have a baby. And my dad he got out of the service and then went to work for civil service. And I grew up later finding out that there were nights they didn't eat so I could have formula as a baby. I mean, these are the things you don't know about. They don't tell you until you're way, way older. And Christmases were always beautiful and wonderful, but, you know, at $70 a month, there's just not a whole lot you can do with that.
It doesn't go very far.
And yet, my Christmases were magical. So, and they were full of love and decorations and good food and lots of laughter and love. And so that's all I ever knew and never questioned anything that went with it. And so I didn't see these things until I left home and then the real world comes crashing in. So
hit you in the face like a sledgehammer.
Yeah, and the butt. A little of both. But let me tell you a story that's not in the book.
Absolutely. I've been waiting all night for this story.
First of all, I need to say, I got to give one big shout out to my PAA, Terry Wilson, who was a tremendous help in helping me get this book out. But she sat through endless hours of me reading this out loud, and she tells me later, you know, there were times I wanted to just smack you. And then there were times I felt like crying, she said. And she says the whole way through, she says, I had to tune out the emotions because she said we had work to do. But I have to give a big shout out and thanks to her for helping me realize finally getting this book off the shelf and out of my mind. And also to my beta readers, who were a big help to me in getting this done, and they're part of my street team, and I thank them, and I love them, and they know it. So, but I had to do that, because without those folks, it just wouldn't have happened. But that said, there was a moment in my past when you remember Phone Booth, right?
Yep.
Okay. Well, phone booths in Europe are different than phone booths in this country. And phone booths in Europe are much more than, we don't have phone booths anymore, but back when we had full-length phone booths, the phone booths in Europe were much more, they were more closed in. There was less window. And, of course, here in the States, they were all window, right? Four sides, all window. You could see everything. Well, over there, if you positioned yourself just right, you could keep the number you were dialing private. And if you were in the booth with someone and you both had coats on, you could keep a lot of things private. And still, it could be very daring to be in a phone booth, especially if it was on a corner of an intersection, a four-way intersection, at noon, in the middle of the day.
If you're
in love, it just doesn't matter if the phone is ringing or not, which ours was. We were just too engaged to care. And meanwhile, the person waiting on the phone call is outside going, excuse me. Can I get my phone call, please? And we're like, sure, no problem. Which we passed the phone out the door, closed the door, and kept
and
on
continued.
Going.
Oh, my word.
Yeah. Oh, love is grand when you're 20.
Oh, my word.
Yes, we were daring young fools. Meanwhile, when the phone call was over, right, the guy takes the receiver, bangs on the door, says, here you go. Thanks a lot. Carry on.
But then you're in Europe and their whole dynamic of sex, love, and lust is totally different from us.
It's exactly different.
It's in America. To them, it's just an accepted way of life.
And they looked at us like, oh, you kids. Meanwhile, I didn't tell you it was also pouring down rain. This poor guy is standing out in the rain, talking on the phone. We're in there panting, banging on the windows, you know, having ourselves a jolly good time. And he's just like, you okay, thanks a lot, carry on. And, you know, we didn't even flinch. We're just like, not caring. You do reach a point when you just don't care anymore. So, yeah. There were things that I did that I look back now and I think, oh, my heavens, what was I thinking?
I am so surprised that story did not make it in the book.
Well, there were just too many little tidbits. It didn't really move. As they say, some scenes don't move the story, so you have to leave them out, right?
You say that one would have moved the story because...
That one didn't move the story anywhere. It didn't have a lesson attached to it.
I would have been laughing so hard I would have woken up my husband.
Well, my favorite in the whole book, though, is Halloween.
Oh, you got to tell that story.
Oh, it's in the one that's in the book?
Tell the Halloween story so it'll sort of pique people's interest and they want to go get that book because that story is absolutely fall down funny.
Okay, well, how about if I pull the page up here? And it's Halloween 1971. And let me see if I can read a little excerpt here. Okay, so let me set this setting for everybody. It's my senior year of school, and it's early in senior year, of course, and of high school. And I've got a steady boyfriend. His name is Cliff. And we're like, you know, two peas in a pod, kind of. He's like 6'5", and I'm barely 5'4", you know, so we're very Mutt and Jeff. But he appreciates my crazy. And, you know, at Halloween time, we used to get all dressed up and scare the neighborhood kids, and then we used to run off to go to all the high school parties and the parties they had downtown, and it was very, very neighborhood-friendly kind of a place that I lived in. And I was widely recognized as being Cliff's girl, so it was, you know, we were kind of in the mood. 1971, you know how it was. We were all very attached and going steady kind of people, so it was very fun. And so I had this idea, and I told Cliff I wanted to celebrate Halloween doing something a little darker, and he kind of tolerated me for my gothic dark side because I love vampires and I love the scary scene, you know, and so he went along with that. And I love cemeteries. Well, we had a great big cemetery in town where I lived, and I used to go walking there, and it was before they started locking cemeteries and before there were people who were raiding cemeteries and destroying the headstones and things. They didn't do that back then. There weren't people who were getting murdered in cemeteries or getting, you know, flashed or kidnapped or anything. The world was different. So I had this idea that we should go to the cemetery to kind of celebrate Halloween. And so he drove us to the cemetery, and there was lots of Spanish moss and lots of shadows, and it was very kind of creepy, and I loved it very much. And so we parked, and we decided we'd start walking through the cemetery. And we kept, you know, stopping to kiss and cuddle and everything. And I should tell you, we're in costume. He's wearing this Lurch costume, this big old tall, very Frankenstein-y looking outfit. And I've got on my classic vampire costume with the big dress and the collar and the cape and my wig, and I'm looking very Vampirilla. And that's when I decided that we, you know, maybe should consummate our relationship in the cemetery. So as we're walking along, I just got to a raised tomb, and that kind of became like, you know, a place to stop. And next thing I know, I'm up on top of the tomb, and it's, you know, what do you call it, make-out time on the table. And that's when I find out that granite and bear skin don't go well together. Ouch, ooh, ouch, scraping, tugging, but oh my. And it was so exciting. And we are trying to be, we're going shh and laughing like the dead can hear us, right? And we're just, you know, finally I'm screaming, and then who's like, wake the dead, go ahead. And it was wonderful. I have to tell you, that was the best sex ever. It was just so much fun. And there it is with my big old vampire cape draped over the tomb. It looks like it's red satin draped everywhere. It looks like a big pool of blood. It's awesome. And I'm half bare butt naked, and it's like if the dead were awake, they certainly got an eyeful, and we had the best time. If anyone had come trick-or-treating, they'd have believed we were the real deal, coming up out of the tomb, pale in the moonlight, vampire cape flapping in the wind, me screaming like a banshee. That was the best time ever. And I don't think wherever Cliff is today, I don't think he'll ever forget that either, because he said that he would never have thought to have sex in a cemetery, but that turned out to be one of the best times ever. And so there we were. That was a high school sweetheart moment that I will never forget. It was the best time. But yeah, the visuals that go with it, you have to read the book.
Yeah, the visuals, I still can't get that visual out of my head. I'm going, no, she didn't. Yes, she did.
Yes, she did.
No, she didn't. Yes, she did.
Yes, I must say we had a good time. Listen, Yvonne, I have to do something before we sign off tonight, something really quick.
Okay.
In our past talk that we had, we talked about my book of poetry called By Light Betrayed, which was Poetry of the Vampires, right?
Yes.
And inside that book, there's a special poem, and it's a New Year's Eve poem, and I'd like to read it.
Absolutely.
It's a vampire poem, I must say, but it will be a good introduction.
How appropriate that it comes on top of the vampire in the cemetery.
Exactly. And I have to say it's appropriate because next year it's going to be all vampires. I have a new series coming out that'll be next year. and more of the redhead that we met in The Midnight Assassin. She'll be back with a prequel novella that leads into the direct vampire series. So this is about her, and this poem is 'Twas the Blood Before New Year.
Ooh, read on, Macbeth.
All right. 'Twas the blood before New Year, and all through the meanest streets, sugary blood echoed with dreams buried in humanity's heartbeats. She'd not traveled far, but took a stalking detour. Her hunger had risen, and there was only one cure. While all the good children were nestled in bed, she walked the wild streets, this undead redhead. In the alley she waited, green eyes glistening bright, taking pleasure from the vilest in the dirty, foul night. Over the rooftop she hunted, a cat to the mouse, chasing her prey over each roof of each house. She appeared as an angel, so porcelain, so pale, and she purred like a kitten, so homeless and frail. But just when you thought it was safe by her side, her teeth found a home in your neck and your pride. A dozen gifts she left at the orphanage door, but the scurrilous janitor she left drained on the floor. While back at the pub, the barmaid was tipped for giving our angel a pro bono nip. She disappeared on the wind, no down on this thistle, and she preened at every gasp and throaty wolf whistle. When all the gifts were received, she rose up on the wind. The vampire paused before heading home again. She called to the untouched and the unwary living, "Thanks for your donations in this season of giving."
I love it. I see a visual. That is an amazing poem, Sherry. That is absolutely beautiful.
Well, thank you. It's a little bit of fun because my redheaded vampire will be back. She's coming back with a vengeance. She has lots more stories to tell. And I have to say, she's a little bit like me, and she likes breaking those glass slippers, I can tell you.
Well, before we leave, you got to tell everybody where you can be found.
Okay, if you follow me on Facebook, it's facebook.com/author Sherry Rensler. I am Poet Phoenix on Twitter. I am Poet Phoenix on Pinterest. I am Poet Phoenix just about everywhere. My website is sherryrensler.com. And I have to say I've been very bad about my blogging and my newslettering, but that's all changing in the new year because we have so many things happening. I also have a street team. You can find applications for the street team on my website, and you can also find it by visiting my PAA's blog. That's Terry Wilson, and she runs Carolina Reads, and she also runs a nice program for book bloggers, and she does a lot of reading herself. So you can find me just about everywhere. I'm easy to spot, and the crazy won't leave you alone once you find me. So
no, it won't. Trust me, lady. No, the crazy won't leave you alone. Trust me. And you're coming back on the show, right? I mean, you've got to read some more poetry.
I would be honored to come back. I would love to share with you some more when the redhead comes back. We'll have stories to tell and dirty deeds to discuss. So.
And we have so much fun together.
We do. You're just a joy. And you're so giving and wonderful to allow us to come and talk about our works. I'm very grateful.
Well, I appreciate you. It's an honor to have you on here because I'm going to tell you, normally I don't read, you know, my genre, horror, comedy, and true crime. I'm on the dark side of life. And to be able to read that book with such an open mind and actually get something good out of it, because just and you did find your happily ever after, but it was from within.
That's correct. I did find it from without too, but not without first finding it from within, and that's the key.
Ladies and gentlemen, if you're looking for happily ever after, you have to look within yourself, because nobody on God's green earth can make anyone else happy. We have to be happy within ourselves, and that is the key to finding happily ever after. Am I right, Sherry?
You are so right, Yvonne. The key to the fairy tale is that the fairy tale is in you. Fairy tales, you don't find the magic and create a fairy tale. The fairy tale is the magic, and the magic is in you. That was the hardest lesson to learn.
And then
now we need to share it. You're sprinkling pixie dust now, honey.
With a few drops of vampire blood.
Absolutely. Got to go to the dark side at night.
Oh, the cemetery.
But the Breaking the Glass Slipper is my pride and joy because it's a true story, and it is my story, and there will never be another one like this. There's not going to be another memoir. Unless I live to be 100, then I might have more stories to tell, but I doubt it. So we're just going to go with this one, and from here on out, it's all vampires, honey. Just the good stuff.
Good, because I've got to get your redhead books. I mean, you've got me hooked now. I can't help it. And I want to give a shout-out to Terry Wilson as well, because it's her fault that you and I are now friends and your guest on this show, and we have many things in common. It's Terry's fault. It's Terry's fault that I stay awake at night.
It's Robbie Cox's fault. Robbie, who introduced us.
It's Robbie's fault.
That's right. We have the Space Coast Conference coming up next year in June, which I'm really looking forward to. And shout out to all the Cox tribe out there, because Yvonne and I are coming, and you better run.
You've been warned. You've been duly warned. Now, ladies and gentlemen, you've heard Sherry and I on this show. You've heard me on my other shows. And like I said, the show will go dark until next Wednesday when we start all over, and I will be posting my next guest. I'll post the whole lineup on my Facebook page. And if you want to be on the show, it's real simple. Number one, my guests do not pay to come on this show. My guests come on this show because I want them here and because I'm paying things forward. People have always been kind to me. And I can't pay it back. That's one thing about this business. You cannot pay it back, but you can pay it forward. So if you have a platform, if you have a book, if you have a business, if you have a song, if you have a poem, if you have a piece of artwork, if you have a passion, if you have an agenda, contact me. Trust me, I won't bite. Now, I might eat you for lunch the next day, but I won't bite.
Oh, you nibble. Go ahead. You know you nibble.
Oh, darn. Do you have to tell everything?
But I do hope they will contact you. Anyone who's listening, if you have, you know, something you'd like to discuss, reach out to Yvonne. She's welcoming. She's eager to talk with you, and it'll be the best experience ever, and for which I am so grateful, Yvonne.
Well, you're quite welcome, my darling friend, and thank you. And you know, it's just a conversation between you and I and 6,004 other close friends. It's no
big
deal, right?
Yeah, that's right. It's like sitting down with a glass of wine, saying, "Let's have a chat."
Yeah, exactly. Because what we do, ladies and gentlemen, is we don't ask the dry questions that you hear most interviewers ask, because that's been done to death. I want to find out about you, the person. I want to find out what makes you tick, why you tick, how you tick, and when you tick. Because when I do that and the listeners hear that, then they're going to want to go and get whatever it is that you're selling or creating. They like that. And if you haven't heard Sherry's interview the first time, go back and look it up, because that's when we did all the background on her. This was gravy. Tonight's show was absolutely gravy. So,
thank you so much, Yvonne. It's been a pleasure.
Well, any last thoughts? You got 30 seconds.
Just pick up Breaking the Glass Slipper, because the fairy godmother is real and she will help you.
And learn to love yourself, ladies and gentlemen. I say this at the end of every show. You are all that you have in your life that is real. And I mean that in an abstract sense. If you don't love yourself, you can never love anyone else. If you
That's
don't
true.
Like yourself, warts and all, bad, good, indifferent, you cannot like anyone else. Be your own best friend so you can be someone else's best friend. And remember this, no one can steal your dream, and no one can steal your attitude or your personality or your goals without your permission. If you have dreams, make them real. If you have to take detours, that's okay. But live, love, laugh, be happy, and make your dreams real. And until next Wednesday night. Hang on a minute, Sherry. Don't hang up when the show's over. Until next Wednesday
okay.
night, ladies and gentlemen, I love you all. Good night. Now, you know what we're going to do is this is going into archives. And once it
okay.
uploads to archives, I'm going to give you the link and tag you in it so you can start blasting it out there.
Yes, ma'am.
And then probably tomorrow I'll get all the podcast up and put it on Facebook and tag you and put it on your web page. Put it wherever you want. This is my gift to you, my darling.
Okay,
make
I certainly will.
And
it's
so
wonderful.
Much.
Oh, you're awesome to talk to. I wish everyone would just jump on this. I don't understand why people are not just falling over themselves because you're such a delight to talk to. You're easy, you're welcoming, and you just the cadre of people that you deal with are just amazing. So if people, I don't know what they think happens when they go on the radio, but I need to tell people it's just not the worst thing ever that they imagine. So.
No,
but thank you
it isn't.
So much.
Well, I do. I am beginning to get people coming to me now saying, I heard that you're looking for guests. I would like to be on your show. And I'm saying, let's do it. One guy even sent me all of his information before I even said, okay. And, you know, with somebody with that kind of gonads, yeah, I'm going to hook you up real quick. Not a problem.
That's awesome. I just got a text from Terry. She said, "Great job." She said, "Tell Yvonne, great job."
Excellent, excellent. It was an amazing show, my sweet friend, an absolute amazing show. And I can't wait to do it again. So keep me updated on when you're going to start getting ready to release The Redhead again, and we'll launch that book too. Because
okay.
we barely skimmed the surface with The Redhead on the last show. And
oh, I know. But we were laughing.
God.
We had such. Oh, I'm glad you liked that poem. It was
so
tongue in cheek. I had such a good time with that. So.
Well, I'm not going to download that on my Kindle. I'm going to buy the book.
Oh, thank you. And speaking of which, I want to get a link to that anthology, please.
Blessing the Darkness. Blessings
yes.
from the Darkness. You can
yes.
get it. Go on Amazon.
Okay.
Under my name. And it
okay.
should be there. If not. Go to blackbedsheets.com and order it directly.
What a name.
Yeah, it's Nicholas Grabowski. Let me tell you about my friend Nicholas Grabowski.
Okay.
I've known this man for a long, long time. He lives in California, and he's been writing since the early 1980s. Now,
mm-hmm.
you're familiar with the movie Halloween, correct, and Michael Myers?
Yeah. Oh, sure.
Well, Nicholas wrote the book Halloween 4.
Oh,
that's the Nicholas Grabowski.
Okay.
So
awesome.
You can
my kind of creep.
Yeah. Oh yeah. You. Oh, and he has Black Bedsheets, which is his own publishing house. But you can order it direct from Black Bedsheets, or you can order it from Amazon, whichever you want to do.
Okay. Which gets the most royalty?
I would say Black Bedsheets because Amazon.
I think so. Usually direct from the publisher. Yeah.
Yeah.
So all right, I'll go that route then.
Go on Facebook and type in go on Facebook and type in Black Bedsheets,
mm-hmm.
and it should bring you up to the Facebook page, and then from there because it's under the heading of Downward and something or another.
Okay.
Friend Nicholas too, because you will absolutely adore him. The man is hilarious.
Okay. Yeah, I'll do that. I'd be pleasure to do that. Yep.
And then
yeah, I definitely would
I'm,
like to contribute to your son. So.
Well, thank you, my darling. I appreciate that.
Well, it's called paying it forward, babe.
You are a light in my life.
Same here. Very much.
So I will get off from here and take care of this and keep me updated on our little redhead.
I will. And listen,
and
you have yourself
yes, ma'am.
A very happy new year, okay?
You too, my sweet one. And keep writing. Keep,
I will.
Keep being,
you too.
Keep being happily ever after. Oh, I've got 3 books going.
Oh yeah, I got 2 in the. I got 2 working right now. So, you know, you're
plus
gonna faint when I end up doing my fairy tales. You're gonna faint. And they're so good.
Oh,
they're so, oh my God, the cover's gonna be white. It's like, oh no.
I can't wait.
Anyway, you take care of you, and thank you so very much.
Oh, you're welcome, my precious one. Thank you, and I will talk to you, and I'll get this stuff up, and I'll send it to you, and we'll just move right on forward.
All right, baby. I'll see you on Facebook. Thank you.
All right. Love you, honey.
Love you, too.
Bye-bye.